Hello, listeners. Jordan here. I just want to let you know that you can listen to Nighttime early and ad-free on Amazon Music. Include it with Prime.
You are listening to the Nighttime Podcast.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to my coverage of the disappearance of then-21-year-old Zach LaFave. In the prior episode of this series, we were joined by the LaFave family spokesperson, Zach's cousin Kim Morton, for a general overview of the many elements of this case. But in tonight's episode, we're going to continue exploring the troubling story, but with a focus specifically on the search that followed Zach's disappearance. Our guest is Victoria Sampson, and she's well-positioned to speak on the search as she's been a central figure and a driving force behind the civilian search. So let's get into our talk. In this episode of Nighttime, our guest is Victoria Sampson, the coordinator of the civilian search for Zach LaFave.
It's been an emotional start to 2021 for Zach LaFave's family and friends as they continue to hold on to hope that he will be found. The 21-year-old was last seen walking along Highway 334 in Plymouth, a community just outside of Yarmouth, around 12:30 in the morning on New Year's Day. His loved ones are still trying to make sense of what happened that night.
So, Victoria, before we get into it, why don't you just introduce yourself? Who are you?
I'm Victoria Sampson. I didn't know Zach. I had New Year's Eve with my family, two small kids. So I woke up pretty early the next day and I seen they were looking for him. And I had heard of him before. He works at a local grocery store where a lot of my family have worked before. Mm. And I was like, oh, you know, maybe it's New Year's Eve, you know, he maybe just sleeping one off somewhere. Like, this could be like embarrassing for him that everybody's looking.
Yeah.
And it just kept going from there. And it just, they kept not finding him and they were getting, you know, people to come out and help. And I couldn't come out and help right away. Plus ground search and rescue were there, so they didn't want anybody. So I made a huge pot of food and brought it in. And then I think the next day, ground and search got called off. And I was sitting at home, seeing all the messages, because I'm from here. I'm from Yarmouth. I live in Tuscott. And everyone I knew seemed to be like, what is happening? So some people organized some kind of, you know, search groups. I went out to one. And it was chaos, complete and utter chaos. Everyone kind of arrived and then just split off in all these different directions. And I just stood there like, this is not how you really, like, you're not going to find someone if there's no rhyme or reason to where you're searching. And then, so I just stood there and my cousin showed up and then everyone came exactly back where they left. And I'm like, so they didn't even like hop over one. And we looked at each other and we're like, this isn't going to, you know, if he's out there to be found, this isn't going to find him. And he's like, Victoria, we need to do something. And I was like, yeah, we do. So when I went home, I put a message on the group and Mandy Penny immediately messaged me. She said I was just at one too and thought the exact same thing. So her and I kind of banded together. She found us a great spot and I was involved from then on.
Wow. So I didn't realize you didn't have a connection to Zach. So you knew him from the community. You knew who's now the family spokesman, Kim Morton, who talked to me last time. But it's but I guess Yarmouth is a small town, so everybody knows everybody. Is that is that that kind of a stereotype true for Yarmouth?
It really is true. Everybody is connected some way. Mm-hmm. If you don't know someone personally, you definitely know somebody who knows them.
Mm-hmm. Or is related. Yeah. So when you see a local community member that you're familiar with them in passing, when you see they're missing, you get involved. But as you just described, the search and rescue, like the organized search, the professional search, that was only a day or two. I thought that would have been longer.
Yeah. Unfortunately for them, I think like with insurance and stuff, they're only allowed to go as long as the police ask them to. Mm-hmm. And when the police ask them to stop, they need to stop. So I think from what I'd heard, because I did speak kind of on the DL to a few of them when we were setting this whole thing up, that they really wished they could have done more. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, their hands were tied.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But they were great to give us, some guidance and some locations that they had not been yet that probably would have been their next place to visit. So,
yes. So there was a bit of handoff of information, but again, you're not a professional search organizer, but you show up for these original community searches and you see the need for organization and strategy and you decide to take the lead with a small group of others.
Yeah, like somebody had to, and it shouldn't have had to be his family. They were going through enough. They shouldn't have to be, coordinating a search effort on top of just their worry and everything. And if you did find him and it was not good, you didn't want them to be the ones, to have to face that.
Yeah, that makes sense. So at the point that you get involved with leading the search and organizing the civilian search or community search or whatever we want to call it, what was the main theory going into it? What did you think had happened?
I personally, he was familiar with the trails through there. Everyone kept telling me he did a lot of biking. So I thought maybe he just was drunk and got turned around and kind of wandered off and got lost and just couldn't find his way out. Maybe he got hurt. Any number of things, especially at first, the longer it went, the more it seemed like if we hadn't found him yet, I wasn't sure that we were going to, but it was really important to the community to keep looking, I think, as long as they did, because everyone felt like they had to be doing something. Mm-hmm. So I was just there to facilitate that.
Yeah. And just give me an idea of the scope of the search, like how many people were showing up to get involved in this?
So when we first started, Mandy got us a place, like a command center, from a local man named Tim. He runs a heating company. So he gave it for free, powered it and heated it. And he was wonderful. We really, really appreciated it. Mm-hmm. And then people started showing up. So the first day was a little bit chaotic. We kind of had to have a safety spiel. We were still in the middle of COVID, so we had to make sure everyone was masking. There weren't too many people in the trailer at one time. And then once word got out that we had started a command center, people started showing up. The first day, we probably had about 50 searchers all day. Mm-hmm. Most people searched for 4 or 5 hours, just themselves. So what we did was my partner, who works from home, she set us up grids that were 5 acres. And we showed them how, you go up one side and then you go, you make your box, then you fill it in. And when that's filled, you can move to the next one. Mm. And we found an app that was recommended for searchers called Gaia. And we taught ourselves how to use it. And Mel taught herself how to make the grids, which was great because I am not that kind of tech savvy. So she did that for me. Wow. And then I just did all the explaining and all the teaching and got them downloaded on everybody's phones and showed them how to use it. And it tracks you. So when you start, you hit the button, you put it in your pocket and you do your grid. You can pull it out, make sure you're still on it. And then when they get back, they send it to my email and then it uploads to the main grid. So everybody can see where that was going. The only problem with that is a lot of people were like, well, if somebody did something to him, they'll know where it is. So we made sure that only people who came in, signed in, gave their contact information that was verified and their email got access to those grids.
Of where you actually started. Okay.
And, we would be like, well, these are the people who knew these places were already searched.
Okay. That
this place was searched and it maybe wasn't. So we wanted to make sure we were, at first we were searching for him to find him, hopefully alive and just confused or hurt. But you always have to be thinking almost the worst possibility so you can prepare for that as well. Mm-hmm. So that was one of our measures. Cool.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people who will be watching and listening to this may not realize that when someone goes missing, of course, there's the professional search that happens briefly, as you described. But after that, for the family, it's pretty much just all right, you're on your own. And that's why the community could just go in the woods and run around like crazy. But you were fortunate to have been able to put together like software that helped you put a grid over the map and have an organized strategic search to ensure that hopefully you weren't missing anything. But without, you know, apps like that and people like you to step up, it's, you know, people would just be on their own to, you know, roam around the woods if they wanted to.
And that's what was happening. And I don't know what it is about me, but like, I couldn't sit back and watch it be so inefficient. Like, mm-hmm. I knew that it would be pure luck if he was stumbled upon that way. Mm-hmm. Right. And then this way, when it was all said and done, we can give the information, you know, to Zach's family, and they can know where has been looked and where hasn't. And if they say, oh, you know, this place wasn't done so well, maybe we'll try there again. That's up to them. Mm-hmm. This is all information that they have. So they know what's been searched, that the community went out and they, you know, they were really working hard for them.
Mm-hmm. And you described that when you got involved with leading the community or civilian search, you had a little bit of information passed on from the professional search that occurred briefly after his disappearance. But other than that information that you got from them as to where maybe they thought was interesting, I heard Kim Morton describe what she knew and what she learned about Zach's last moments. Was there any kind of thing about his night that helped direct your search? Like, was there any kind of leads you took from what you knew about him and his behavior that you're like, you know, we need to look in this area because this is possible?
Yeah. So, you know, just because we knew he was intoxicated, and that he didn't have pants on. If we did find him, we knew that he would be in bad shape if he was just hurt or lost. So we knew he wouldn't be within yelling distance, most likely. Mm-hmm. So we tried to make sure our grids, instead of being along the road wide, went along the road deep. Like, they went in farther than somebody could be yelling for help, right? Because if he was just off the road, you would hear him if he was help, if you needed help. So we made sure to do that. We ourselves, as a community search group, we didn't search the trails at all. We knew that his friends had that well in hand. And so did the rest of the community that had side-by-sides and four-wheelers. And also, if he was there, if he was on the trails, he would have been found on the trails already.
So just because of people moving through on motorcycles or whatever would have.
Yeah, because so many people were looking, you know, for him that way. We really needed boots on the ground and deeper into the woods than most people were thinking they needed to go.
Okay. Wow. And for someone who hasn't visited this area, what the woods around where you were searching for him, like, how thick is that? Is it like, because where I am in Halifax, generally when I walk in the woods, there's like, you know, trees and maybe a little bush, but I have a feeling it's thicker forest out in Yarmouth.
So the day before we completely set up, I went out with one of my cousins who's a wilderness guide, and we did one of the grids. Mm-hmm. It was very thick in parts and very boggy in other parts. Some still standing water, like almost like small ponds in a lot of it. So my spiel was always like, the thing is if you've come to a spot where you can't push through, then don't push through, because he was drunk and chances are he didn't push through either. You're looking for the easiest way to where you're going. And if you can't get there, especially if you're drunk, you're just going to turn and go another way. Don't wade into water. Have a look around. Don't get wet. You'll be miserable if you're wet while you're searching. And stay in the bogs because they're dangerous. You know, some of the bogs have bog holes. He could easily have fallen into one of those, but we would never be able to check that. They go down a whole person. Yeah. But that's something that we just, you know, we can't search that.
Yeah. Well, I guess you need to
want to keep everyone safe while they are out there. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, I grew up in the woods. I know it's the path of least resistance usually. Right. So you're not gonna, you know, push yourself through and scratch yourself all up on branches if you can step 10 feet to the left and go through nothing. So there's no point in that either.
And I guess it's like, although there could be spots that were so rough that you weren't able to search, it's still strategically you were kind of searching as much area as possible without risking yourself. So it's, I guess, like, even though there would be like a bog or something that you didn't tread into, you use that time to search other areas that he'd more likely be. Because I just think people may listen and be like, oh, like they skipped areas and stuff. But it's how large of an area would you say was searched? Like between all these grids, like, are we talking about like kilometers?
We had over 100 5-acre grids.
Okay.
And I think we must have done 30 or 40 of them.
Wow. So that's a huge amount of area.
Yeah. And then there's other people who would just show up and like they had a feeling about a place, which I never discouraged. If you had a feeling about a place, if it was bugging you, if it was on your mind, go search there. Even if it's been searched, you know, because sometimes people just can't let it go, right? Like I keep thinking about it, or I dreamed about it last night. It's like, you know what? Then just go have a look. And once you're satisfied, come back and I'll give you a grid. Or they would call and say, hi, I'm in Quinnan. I know he said he was in Quinnan, but like maybe on the Wilson Road, and it doesn't really seem possible, but like, I really want to look here. Well, then go look there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I was just there to facilitate. I'm not a boss. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to help it be more organized. But by all means, if you want to go to the quarry that's been searched 40 times, go have a look around and then come back and I'll give you a place that hasn't been looked yet.
I suppose just as long as people are helping.
Right. As long as people are out, you know, and a lot of times it's just people just want to help, but some people can't be in the woods like that. It's just not possible. So, I mean, I had some people at the command center. I had a great team there who was helping, you know, organize, you know, we had waivers we had to sign, things we had to explain, stuff we had to hand out. The community was great. They brought a lot of food. We had little snack packs all ready to give to people. So we had this whole routine kind of going, and everyone kind of that was helping out kind of learned that. So everyone was going out with the information, the safety, the food, our phone numbers and things like that. And, you know to come back and check in so we know that they're out of the woods.
As far as Zach's disappearance, of course we all know that his pants and wallet were left behind and found early on. Was that found by the organized search and rescue, or was that by the civilian search?
I'm unsure who found that. I didn't ever get the information. I think it was the organized search, but I, like I said, I don't know that for sure. I verified that was true with Zach's family, because we were getting a lot of speculation, especially early on. I became an admin for the Facebook group, and it was constant speculation. Who did this? Who did that? You know, trying to police it so people's names weren't out there, because people were like, I don't want my name on Facebook. Like Zach was my friend, but I really, like, I was fishing that night. Like I wasn't even home. I don't blame them. It was a lot of pressure for a lot of people. So it was a lot to police. And that's why I ended up making almost like fact sheets. You'll see them on. Yeah, I made those. And the timeline. Oh, did
you? Okay, yeah. The timeline that you made was very helpful, because it's, as someone outside of Yarmouth, like I read some of the initial news articles about Zach's disappearance, but it was all very general and vague as far as what happened. And it wasn't until I joined the Facebook group and saw the fact sheets where it really broke down the timeline that I thought, like, oh my goodness, like this is, there's much more to this than I ever would have thought reading a couple articles. That's valuable.
And that's why I made them, because it was a constant pulling of like resources to have to answer those questions over and over again. So I was one night, like I was putting in probably like 14 to 16 hours a day there, and then coming home and figuring out the maps and making those things. Like it was a lot. But you know, I have a great support at home, so
good. And as you smile off camera, you mentioned there that there's a lot of rumors, accusations, speculation that surrounds Zach's disappearance that goes down online. Other than that, just being like an annoyance, has it affected the search? Like, is there information that's coming up and kind of muddying the waters as far as what may have happened?
I think when we were searching now, I don't think, I mean, there are still people doing some searching, but I think now everyone kind of is thinking more along the lines of something foul play happened there, something bad happened. And until somebody comes forward, we're not going to have answers. during the search, the most frustrating thing for me personally was people who were not going to be searching but kept telling me where to send people. Like they'd be like, go look on the Newell Road, the road he disappeared from, like a weekend. And I'm like, yeah, I think we've covered the Newell Road. Like, and I would get like 78 messages in a day telling me to search the Newell Road.
Yeah. The backseat like, drivers of.
And I was like, yeah, people. We've done the Newell Road. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And then also the psychics were a little bit to deal with because people were like, oh, I'm going to go search here because I know there's an orange something. And I'm like, okay, that's not even in the search area, but thank you.
Right? That's
encourage people to do yeah. any, you know, because they're feeling the need to do something. So you don't want to discourage them, mm-hmm. but I'm like, sure, just let me know where you were and I'll mark it down. Mm-hmm.
The idea of the psychics, I want to ask about that is like, because on my show, I've covered a lot of stories of missing persons cases and the searches that would occur after. And it seems like one thing they often have in common, sadly, is ransom demands from random people who want gift cards or something. And yes. of course that Kim told me about Zach being the subject of that. But another thing seems to often be psychics just coming out of the woodwork with these vague ideas. Like when you say psychic tips, is it like local psychics or is it just like, are there psychics that just search the internet for missing persons?
Yeah. So not only we definitely had ones from Nova Scotia and local, we had some from Ontario and some from whatever, but it was, to me, it's not that I don't believe in that kind of thing. It's mm-hmm. just, it's, I think he's by water. Yeah. He's in Yarmouth. It's, or like, it's a very, like I see trees and water. And maybe an old truck. Yeah, that's Yarmouth. You wouldn't believe the old trucks that we've come across in the woods because that's just what people did. Like, mm-hmm. and I got one day somebody offered to fly us in a helicopter or in an airplane. We flew in an airplane over the search area. And there are literal hundreds of rusted out cars that I'm sure you could see from Google.
Mm-hmm. Or yeah.
If you took the chance. But I mean, it's just, you know, I take it with a grain of salt. If you're looking and something piques your memory, like, oh, they did say that, then okay. But like, I was not sending people out based on the information that psychics were getting.
Yeah,
but I don't think they're credible. I needed it to be more fact-based.
Uh-huh. And sticking with the strategy. And I guess that's why it's so important to have like the app and the grid and stuff is like, as all this other stuff is coming at you, as long as you have your grid and you know, we did search here. Let's focus our, you know, what manpower I can control. Let's focus on this area. Now, of course, during all the search, all the support and community members that step up, you haven't found Zach. Was there anything that you did find related to him? Or possibly related to him? Like, was there any sign of this guy?
There was no sign of him whatsoever. Anything that anyone found, we let the police know mm-hmm. and they went and took it. But I've spoken to a member privately and nothing ever came back to mm-hmm. him. So other than the very first day or night where they found his clothes and stuff like that, that's the only thing that I have heard that's ever been found. And, you know, he's still there, or like a cell phone. Like there's still things that are missing that belong to him, but nobody's been able to find anything.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Now, given the amount of searching that happened and that you were involved with, you had talked earlier about a lot of people are thinking like, you know, foul play or some kind of criminal element may be at play. Given the amount of searching that's happened without him being found, is that leading you to think that there could be more to this than he just stumbled off?
Unfortunately, I think at this point, that's probably the case. I go back and forth because we searched so much and didn't find anything, you know, it kind of leads me to believe that. But then I've also, since, you know, starting this, have read a lot of things and watched a lot of things with missing people. And sometimes people, it's very easy to miss. And, you know, they're cold and they curl up in a ball and you walk right by them and you don't even know. And I know that can happen. People can be found in places that have been searched 100 times. So sometimes I feel like it's got to be foul play. There's nothing else. But then other times I feel like this town has a really hard time keeping secrets. And this has been a big secret for quite some time for this town. So maybe he did just go missing. I can't make a decision. And the only thing is I wish that I could have helped bring some closure to Zach's family. Lorna and Darren, they're such nice people and they're such good people. And I feel so badly that I couldn't help them.
Well, I think organizing a search team, although, you know, you didn't find Zach, I think a big help is doing what you've done. Like you've already talked about the amount of hours you put in and looking at, you know, your work, creating the timeline and administrating the Facebook group. Those are the things that, like, a family who's dealing with the vague loss of a loved one, I couldn't imagine being like, while I'm dealing with this, I'm going to run a search team, learn how to moderate a Facebook group, figure out Photoshop and make timelines that can be shared around. Like that's that kind of stuff. I couldn't imagine it. But that's why people like you that step up, and it's very admirable that you put your time into something like this. And it's like when I've been following Zach's story, I've read so many articles with photos of these large search teams. And although I didn't see you mentioned by name, it's like you were in on making all that stuff happen.
Yeah.
Is our searches still, you had mentioned that searching is for the most part stopped. Is there still much like actual search happening, especially with it being summer? You'd think now would be a good time.
Yeah. I mean, I think his family still goes out sometimes and searches. I haven't done any organizing. I've always told everyone and on the Facebook group that I still have maps. I still have grids. I still have all that. And I can provide that at any time for people who like to search. It's especially hard right now for me to be out searching with two small kids, but and everyone's back to work now.
Exactly, because he would have disappeared when we were shut down and locked down, so which would have been a bit advantageous because it would have allowed you to dedicate as much time and the community members to volunteer their time. But I suppose like the original emphasis would have been on searching the area around where he disappeared. Now that that's done, it's
like where else do you go? Kind of. There's a few more places. You know, we made like 100 grids, and we only did maybe half of them. But some of them are just so thick that you couldn't do anyways, which we didn't realize until people tried it. They're like, nope.
Yeah.
But it's just we've searched so much in that area. Mm-hmm. And then we did have some dogs in as well. So, you know, they kind of went out in all around and nothing was, that was kind of like almost the end of the community searches. Is like, we got the Zach's family arranged, and me and a few people facilitated them in and around without any kind of people knowing, so they wouldn't be bothered. And, you know, when that was over, that was kind of like, we all had to have a big talk about where we were going to go from here if the dogs didn't find anything, right? Like, where else is there to search if they can't find anything? Like, are we going to? You know, because it was a lot of time and a lot of people.
You talked about the idea that people online have different theories and speculation. You also talked about if it's a secret, you know, you'd be surprised that people can keep it. Like if two or three people are involved in this, it only takes that relationship up between those three souring and one of them are going to, you know, say something. That obviously hasn't happened yet, but I do understand that there has been like finger pointing online and whatnot. Like how, like don't name names or anything, but how bad has it gotten? Like are there
it's
people
bad.
That it's bad.
Yeah, like even during the search, like I had messages from people being like, I know so and so did something, if the police don't do something, I'm gonna go there. And then it's like I'm having to like spend my time, I'm finally home and I'm having to spend an hour to like calm people down and then be like, okay, if you don't stop, I'm gonna call the police on you, because you cannot go to that person's house and threaten them or do whatever. Like Zach's family doesn't want you to go kill somebody.
Yeah.
You think they're guilty, right? Like, you know, you have to let the police, unfortunately, that's how law works. Like you have to let the police do their job. You're not the police. And as much as you think it's true, or even if you know it's true, it's not up to you. And that was hard for a lot of people to hear.
Well, is there anything that seems credible that's floating around, or does it all just seem like rumors and finger pointing?
There's some that seems really credible. Some is completely outlandish. That is just, you know, you're like, okay, I'll pass it along, because I still, like Kim, get a lot of messages from people. Mm-hmm. But I pass everything along, and her and I, you know, sometimes have a giggle about
the absurdity,
you know,
of some of it.
Trying to help, you know, mm-hmm. people just, anything they hear, they're just trying to help Zach's family get answers, and I understand that. So, but there are a few that are pretty credible, but I mean, like, what do you, you know, same with Kim, like, what are we supposed to do? We let the police, you know, I let her know, she lets the police know, and it's up to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why they've been having kind of these marches and things with Colton Cook's family, because mm-hmm. they're kind of being swept under the rug by the justice system as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we went out and did that, and I was, you know, more than happy to go and support them in that too. Like, when I told them that I'll do anything they need for help, I meant that, and I meant it for as long as they need me. Mm-hmm. I made buttons for them, for them to sell and to give away, and we're raising money for the award with them. And yeah.
The rumors or the theories that I've heard go around most often involve either a car accident, possibly someone accidentally hitting him and trying to hide that. And the second being, connection to drugs for his friend, through his friends or something. Are they the theories that you're, is that kind of what you're hearing?
That's mainly quite early on. I thought as well about the car accident one, because I know it was New Year's Eve, and I know all the fishermen were still going to be going out. So like, it wouldn't be, I mean, not that fishermen are bad, but like, it wouldn't be above, you know, people heading to the wharf drunk and hitting someone and panicking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that could happen to anyone or anybody out New Year's Eve drinking and hitting somebody accidentally. Mm-hmm. But there was really no evidence of that either. Like, there's no skid marks, there's no blood, there's no evidence really anywhere. Mm-hmm. And they were out within kind of like an hour of him last being seen, and there was no evidence of that. So I don't know. And I, from everything I've heard, you know, Zach wasn't really into drugs. He was a pretty good kid. He was 21. He partied like everyone, you know, and I think that's what scares most people around here, is that there's really no answers. And, you know, we're all from a small town, and we all kind of did stupid things when we were 20, 21, and walked home, you know, an hour from your house in the dark by yourself, because you're in a small town and you think you're safe. And I think for a lot of people, this was worrying that he still hasn't been found, and there seems to be no connection to anything other than maybe he was hanging out with the wrong people.
Mm-hmm. And what about the phone calls? Like, when he left, he made a few phone calls to friends, but it seems like those calls really didn't give much information, because he didn't seem to know where he was.
Exactly. And that was something we at the search center kind of dealt with a lot, people wanting to go search on the Wilson Road in Quinnen. And like I said, in the kind of timeline I put out, you know, he could have, I mean, there is a possibility that he made it to the Wilson Road, but I mean, really there's not. Like, if he was seen and then he was on the phone within a few minutes, it's a 25 minute drive. So even if he got picked up, like, it's very unlikely, but you never know. I mean,
I never thought of that. Like, cause he very well could have gotten he would have had to get in a car without his pants on.
But, yeah. I don't know.
Okay.
Something happened to him, I think, that prevented him from making it back to his family. And I don't think it was, I think it was out of his control.
I want to thank you for joining Victoria and I for our discussion surrounding the still unexplained disappearance and search for Zach LaFave. If anyone listening has any information about the disappearance of Zach LaFave, please do the right thing and contact the Yarmouth RCMP at 902-742-9106. You can also anonymously contact the Nova Scotia Crime Stoppers at 1-800-222-TIPS. or if for whatever reason you're uncomfortable with doing any of that yourself, you can contact me and I'll pass the information along on your behalf. Zach's family needs and deserves answers. Now, before I wrap it up, I also want to call out to anyone connected to Zach's disappearance who'd like to share their story. You can contact me at nighttimepodcast@gmail.com. And with that, I'm going to begin wrapping up this episode, but before I do, let me end with some thanks. First, a huge thank you to Victoria for donating her time and sharing her perspective on the search for Zach with us. I'd like to give a shout out to LJ from the Dystopian Simulation podcast, who provides the voiceovers for this series, and Monty Data, who contributes the music. And then lastly, but most importantly, a massive thank you goes out to each and every one of you listening to Nighttime, as without your interest and your support, this show would be as pointless as it would be impossible. And on the topic of support, I want to thank the newest subscribers to the premium feed. Lori, K-Post, and Samantha, thank you for going premium. And for anyone else who'd like to support the show, you can help keep this going in a variety of ways. First of all, a premium feed subscription costs just a couple dollars a month, and that money funds the creation of the show. But also, the premium feed will give you the episodes 2 days early, give them to you ad-free, and give you access to a full back catalog of episodes. If that sounds like something you'd like, you can go premium right now at patreon.com/nighttimepodcast. And even if you don't want to go premium, you can still help support the show by simply sharing this episode on social media and letting all your like-minded friends know what we're doing here. If anyone listening has any story ideas or wants to get feedback on the show or submit a question or comment to be aired in an upcoming episode, you can do all that and more at nighttimepodcast.com. I hope to hear from you. But until then, take care of each other, hug your loved ones tight, and let me know if you see anything weird.
The Nighttime Podcast is written, hosted, and produced by Jordan Bonaparte.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.